You're listening to Human Rights Talks, organized by the Montreal Institute for Genocide and Human Rights Studies.
Welcome to the new series of discussions on international security, hosted by MIGS on X Spaces. This episode focuses on TikTok, determining the threats the social platform poses for governments and average users, the technological feasibility of a nationwide TikTok ban in the United States and beyond, and its impact on Western nations' relationship with China. The experts featured in this discussion are Charles Burton, a senior fellow at Synopsis, Changqing Kuang, a senior analyst at the Interparliamentary Alliance on China, and Connor Healy, the Director of Government Research at IPVM. This panel is moderated by Kyle Matthews, the Executive Director of MIGS.
First, I'll just introduce myself. My name is Kyle Matthews. I'm Executive Director of the Montreal Institute for Genocide and Human Rights Studies. We're really pleased to be organizing this discussion today with the support of our esteemed partner, the Konrad Adenauer Stiftung in Canada. They've given us support to organize a series of spaces chats in the lead up to the Montreal International Security Summit that's going to take place in Montreal in October. And we'll have a focus on China and the Indo-Pacific. So we're trying to really bring some of the top thinkers from around the world to help us understand a whole set of security human rights issues related to China and the Indo-Pacific. And the TikTok subject is very important. We know India has banned it. We've seen other governments that have banned either military or their own government phones from having TikTok on there for concerns over security and privacy issues. But I'd like to really maybe just jump in this discussion now, because we saw that the U.S. Congress has voted to actually ban TikTok in the U.S. So this is being amplified as a public policy discussion in multiple jurisdictions. But maybe let's get started here. I want to ask all three of you if you could maybe tell us, what are the major security risks posed by TikTok for Western governments and average users? Who'd like to get started?
Let me try it. I think Connor has much more detailed technical information. I'll just give you the general political thing as I see it. I think there are essentially two aspects here. First is the consideration of data harvested from TikTok users being transferred to massive databases to be manipulated by the Chinese regime through, you know, their sophisticated artificial intelligence. And ultimately, the end of this, of course, is to serve the geostrategic interests of Xi Jinping's overall agenda to achieve a new global order dominated by China, you know, the community of the common destiny of mankind. It's really the potential that's the concern here. You know, we know that China has been hacking into databases and downloading huge numbers of gigabytes of sensitive personal information of people living outside China for many years now. And the data stored by TikTok in the US could still be accessed by employees in China. I guess, why do they want the data? I think it's to identify potential targets for espionage activities or co-optation, you know, to know who would be vulnerable to Chinese approach because maybe they have debts or they're unhappy in their work or, you know, their career progress, or they can be blackmailed over activities that they prefer not to be publicly known, sexual misconduct, embezzlement. Or indeed just to identify naive and greedy politicians and policymakers that could be cultivated to give tacit consent to Chinese covert, malign, and coercive strategic agendas. And of course, as I'm sure will be talked about by one of our panelists, to seek information used to discredit or enable coercion of critics of the Chinese communist regime. So, you know, TikTok has the potential to become a device in China's overall hybrid warfare strategy. And, you know, I think for people in Canada, as a country surrounded by three oceans and a superpower ally to the south, and no history of experience of foreign invasion, we tend to feel that wars happen in foreign parts, not here. But, you know, really, it's right here because of the high-tech nature of hybrid warfare today. And TikTok has the potential to be weaponized, and we have to address this reality. Just briefly, the second aspect is whether TikTok would be mobilized at critical moments by adjustment of the algorithm to serve China's hybrid warfare disinformation to confuse, deceive, or demoralize. You know, when you have a situation where I understand that TikTok is where 30% of people under the age of 30 get their news, the algorithm has enormous potential to influence everything from perceptions about international events or domestic elections. TikTok denies all of these allegations, but it hasn't disproved them. I mean, for example, TikTok claims not to have the capability to track users' locations, yet its terms of service requires users to consent to exactly that. I think any concessions that we receive from the foreign representatives of ByteDance have to be taken in the context that we are talking about hybrid warfare and a Chinese regime that's demonstrated again and again its dishonesty in international engagement. So they lie about why they're so averse to being compelled to sell TikTok to foreigners outside of China's manipulative concern. But really, the only option is for us to, you know, get TikTok away from the control of the Chinese communist regime, who will apply the data harvested through TikTok to purposes that go against Canada's interests. So let me just finish up with that.
Thanks, Charles. That was pretty deep and gives us a big view on the security picture. I'd like to ask if Glacier, if you could give us what's your perception of this from your work at the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China.
Hi, everyone. I'm Cho Ching. I'm very happy to be invited here and joining Charles and Connor, which I admire your work for a long time. I actually basically agree on everything Charles has said, and want to add a bit more. On mass data collection and data transfer, the problem does not only lie in the data is definitely going to be accessed or transferred to China. It's that not even in the European Union or the UK, where the most so-called advanced data protection legal framework is in place, the GDPR is in place, there's no way to stop data being transferred to places like China, where no sufficient data protection is available. So they can transfer your data by entering into a contract with, for example, ByteDance, the parent company, which gives you the perception that they do provide you with certain kinds of protection when they actually don't. And then your data just get transferred without you being able to do anything. And if you believe that your rights to data protection is being violated in China, there's no way under such a rule of law system in China, which is basically non-existent, that you can get any kind of legal remedy. And from a privacy point of view, this is against the fundamental rights or the fundamental principles of data protection. And on the algorithm part, the algorithm of TikTok is being developed and deployed by ByteDance. And according to the Chinese regime right now, if you want to disclose the detail of the algorithm, you have to get approval from the PRC. And as Charles has said, it will alter the worldview of people. And there has been cases of censorship already, like Uyghur-related contents have been taken down before. And I completely agree on the point where Charles is talking about, like, how does it shapes the discourse or shapes the political discussions that younger people are in, if that's all there, or how they receive, like, news and information and so on. And one more point I'd like to add is a lot of critics of the approach to try to ban TikTok or try to de-risk TikTok from China would say that, oh, a lot of social media platforms do the same thing. They also collect mass data, they also transfer data, they also do a lot of, like, misinformation and so on and so forth. But the problem is a lot of the social media companies are private entities. They are not entirely linked to the government, whereas TikTok and ByteDance are heavily under Beijing's influence. Like, there have been reports about a lot of the employees of TikTok and ByteDance actually have close ties with the Chinese Communist Party. And like take Facebook or Google as example, their headquarters are in the US, and there is at least a functional, to a certain extent, a rule of law system, and there's procedural justice, but there's none in China, that there's no legal remedies that's possible. And it's the actor behind the whole TikTok company or the TikTok business that we don't trust. And it's likely that it's used for more than just earning money, as most social media companies do when they sell their users for advertisement. But as Charles said, it's more than just making money. It can be used for hybrid warfare, given the close ties that it has with Beijing government. The concerns of like other social media do exist, but it cannot be compared to what TikTok is right now. So I think that's all I have for now. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Tring Tring. That was really it really gave a thorough overview of all the issues we want to discuss today. Connor, I'd like to turn to you. You just co-wrote op-ed in a Canadian media. What's your view on this? And from your perspective, your organization, what concerns you about TikTok?
Sure. So it's great to be here. Great to, I guess, rather than see you, hear you again, Charles, and great to meet you as well. Sorry, it was Chung Ching. I was reading off your Twitter profile, so I wasn't sure. But as an initial matter, IPVM, it's, I think you call it an orphan acronym. It sort of officially means nothing, but I'll let you in on the secret. It stands for Internet Protocol Video Market Info. Which is an artifact of what we initially focused on, IP cameras. An interesting point was just raised about TikTok's, how many employees have ties to the Chinese Communist Party. One of the fascinating things about this community of people who speak about China and technology is that, we're discussing, such provocative claims, and what I think we all realize are actually quite conservative terms. Because if we sort of are going to say the quiet part out loud here, saying that many ByteDance employees have ties to the Chinese Communist Party, we all know that we're almost certainly understating the reality of this. But, it's important to focus on what we can prove with the evidence. And so at a minimum, they have ties to the Chinese Communist Party. I'm thinking of an example of a report that we're going to release soon on a different company where a major executive there involved in technology development, we've just discovered, turns out to simultaneously be the head of a major research and development lab for the Ministry of Public Security. Who would have thought? In any case, I'd like to sort of put a novel, not a novel point perhaps, but an important point I'm not seeing addressed on this issue sort of out there for discussion. A lot of people are comparing TikTok to other social media companies, and they also do bad things. Charles, you mentioned that lie about being able to track your location. They say they're not tracking your location, but it's in the privacy policy, and we know they are. And, the counter argument to you there, Charles, is that that's sort of the oldest lie in the book when it comes to social media companies. I can think of many American companies who said they aren't tracking your location, and they actually were. And it's all nonsense. Of course they can track your location. And of course TikTok can do it. And then, the question is raised, and this was sort of put to me a few times in a panel discussion I participated in last night on the agenda, is sort of, okay, yes, it's bad that TikTok's doing that. What makes it different from other social media companies? What is it about TikTok that's so important if apparently China can just buy all this data from data brokers, or if they can use other social media platforms to conduct propaganda? Okay, so here's the fundamental point I think we need to look at. I think that a large number of people in this space are committing the sort of analytical sin of coming to conclusions as though they have all the data, when in fact they only have a small amount of data, and they're coming to conclusions just based on that small amount of data. And those conclusions are based on TikTok's privacy policy and what they've been able to ascertain TikTok collects. But there is a distinction between the categories of data that we know TikTok collects, your contacts, if you consent to that, keystroke patterns, IP address, your image, your body, your face and body features, if you're sharing your camera, we know those categories of data are collected, and yes, other social media companies can connect those categories, but that is only a proxy for trying to understand what data TikTok actually has on us. And that's a black box. This is like quite fundamental, I think, because categories of data are not the same as the insights that TikTok has. And this is an algorithm that famously can start showing you videos that you like after just a few scrolls, after just a few minutes on the app. How much does it know about us after hours using the app, or days, or weeks, or hours every day for a year? We have no idea. That is a completely different question from what categories of data it collects. And frankly, I think it's the difference between, you know, like taking a medical history and doing a brain biopsy, right? Like, we're totally conflating these things. And this really needs to be addressed.
Thanks, Connor. I'd like to talk about this idea of a possible ban. India's, as far as I understand, and anyone correct me if I'm wrong, is the only country that's banned TikTok, not just government officials, but across the board in the country. And we've seen, the Chinese government respond, to the U.S. Congress talking about this ban. But how would a government ban on TikTok impact Canada-China relations or U.S.-China relations? What would this impact trade, foreign investment, diplomacy? Does anyone have anything they'd like to kind of give a view of what could happen if this actually came to fruition?
Well, I think, Kyle, that, it would be pretty rich if the Chinese complained about us banning a Chinese social media, considering that China has banned.
This space was downloaded via spacesdown.com. Visit to download your spaces today.
And everything to do with Google, Facebook, Twitter, and so on. So, in terms of maintaining national security, China gets it in not allowing foreign companies to have social media that is unable to be controlled by them. So I don't see it affecting relations beyond, of course, the Chinese will do the usual hypocritical thing of saying how outrageous it is that you restrict the freedom of people to enjoy the social media that they prefer. In some ways, I think we may gain respect from China when they understand that we know what's going on and we're not going to tolerate it. In terms of the actual mechanics of the ban, I don't know how that works. I mean, how do you stop people from accessing a certain internet site? I mean, do we have the ability to prevent people using VPNs or whatever to access TikTok? And then there's the overall question of the high degree of extreme addiction of such a large fraction of the population to the app and the number of vested interests inside Canada who generate income and their livelihood through the use of this pernicious app, that it becomes quite troublesome to ban it. What I'd like to see is, TikTok to be completely eliminated from any access abroad, in other words, TikTok to cease to exist. And then some other substitute that would be more of a commercial nature to be brought about. I think, to expand on Connor's point, there is nothing in China. There is no enterprise connected to China whose primary purpose is not to serve the overall geostrategic interests of the regime. That always takes precedence over profitability. It's, it's an integrated party, state, military, business enterprise regime that's quite different from anything that exists anywhere else. And that's what makes this this business of TikTok so concerning, is of course they're going to use it strategically. And I think in time of conflict, then TikTok can be mobilized to perform a much more weaponized function than it may be already in terms of censorship or manipulation of algorithms or election interference. So it sits there quietly waiting to come to life. And I think that picks up on Connor's point that it's much more serious than, we rather politely and conservatively believe. But in terms of actual getting rid of it, I just don't see how any government would be able to achieve this.
I could get into the sort of technical kind of like how that would play out technically, a ban, if that would be helpful.
Yes, please, Connor, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So there are sort of, you know, two scenarios, ban and divestment, right? And so let's start with ban. You know, in the U.S. bill, basically what happens is, you know, the Department of Justice is given the ability to enforce this ban, and there's a fine of, you know, $5,000 per user for any company that's just sort of facilitating access to TikTok. And so what will happen is this will actually take a lot of time to play out, because you have a lot of people that have TikTok on their phones. The first thing that'll happen is Apple will take it off the App Store. But as far as we are aware, at least officially, there is no mechanism for Apple to mass delete an app off of people's phones. The same is also true with Google and Android, as far as we're aware. They may privately have one. If they do, they probably won't tell us, certainly not for this. And so there will be a lot of people that still have it on their phones. There is the possibility of blocking traffic. That's like playing whack-a-mole, very challenging to do. But the app will age out, basically. As software updates occur for Apple and Android phones, it'll become sufficiently dated that it'll basically just stop working. It'll also be unable to advance in comparison to the other apps. So 3-4 years down the line, it'll be likely close to non-existent, it'll be pretty rare that someone has TikTok on their phone. The situation's a bit different for Apple and Google, right? Because, you know, Apple has this walled garden app store, so they can unilaterally decide to prevent people from downloading it. You know, it's possible that on Androids, people could still find ways to download it. But any company that's facilitating that, you know, it sort of remains to be seen, for instance, whether Google would be, you know, Google could conceivably be forced to ensure that TikTok is not downloaded on those phones. There are possible solutions there. So net-net, it'll take a few years, but it will happen, even without doing that sort of whack-a-mole approach where you're blocking IP addresses and other traffic. As far as divestment, you know, nobody knows exactly how that'll look, but, you know, and it may well not happen. Short answer is that someone buys it, right? And then you end up with two entities. I think the real question is sort of, you know, if there's suddenly a U.S. version of TikTok, does that increase the likelihood that other countries will just kind of gravitate to that entity? You know, are there going to be two TikToks, or are there going to be three if Canada bans it, right? Like, for instance, you know, we don't quite know.
Thanks, Connor. I'd like to get your views on this, but I'd also would ask you if you could tell us about, you know, is TikTok actually available in China? you know, like, I wonder if you could talk about domestically, you know, what happens in China and how does this feed into this giant, this narrative we're discussing?
So, in IPAC, other than the US proposal of forcing TikTok to divest or ban it, or else it will be banned, in the UK, some of our members are trying a quite different approach. Instead of banning TikTok, we're seeking to amend the Data Protection and Digital Information Bill that's being proposed in the House of, that's going through the House of Lords right now. And we are trying to change the law to ban data transfer to places without sufficient data protection through the contract framework that I just talked about. And we are now going through the whole process of different procedures in the House of Lords and later in the House of Commons. So nobody knows what will happen. But this is one way of our UK members seeing how we can try to minimize or try to control the problem. Even though, like, we can't possibly know how many data or if they are still transferring data if this amendment became law, but at least we have another hurdle. We put in some new laws, new regulation trying to manage the data transfer, like, side things. So that's how the UK is approaching it. And this same approach could be applicable to the EU, given the similar set of laws that are using on data protection. And on the other question about TikTok in China, there's actually no TikTok in China because they have another version, a localized version of TikTok that is called Douyin. And Douyin shares basically almost all the functions, all the features of TikTok, but a very significant difference that is the content censorship is much more severe in China on this Chinese version of TikTok called Douyin. The reason being, censorship makes up a key feature of the Chinese firewall system, so that certain information, certain topics cannot be discussed online. The reason why Douyin plays a role in all of these fight or arguments around TikTok is that it shows you how much ByteDance can do when it comes to controlling discourse and trying to manipulate the algorithm so that you only see certain things. And Douyin has been known to be helping the party in China to try to censor content, direct the political discourse when big social incidents or social affairs happens. And I think that has to take into account in how does it change how we see ByteDance and therefore TikTok, because those two companies are linked. And I'd say this is the fundamental thing that we have to take into account when it comes to looking into the difference between the two versions.
So I'd like to turn to the issue that, you know, we see in the U.S. that there seems to be, like on both sides of the political parties, the Democrats and Republicans, there's bipartisan support, you know, against TikTok and seeing China as a authoritarian state that poses a security threat. I'm wondering, if the U.S. does go ahead and ban TikTok, will this open the floodgates for other countries to do the same? Do you think that there's a political appetite out there in different Western countries or others to follow suit if the U.S. Does so? I'm curious to get feedback. Charles, maybe you can talk about the Canadian context, but I'd love just to know, like, what could this lead to?
Well, I mean, you know, every country should be aware that TikTok presents a security threat to that nation. You know, it's not just the U.S. And so if the U.S. is able to come up with some method to prevent all of this data from being sent to a hostile power who may use that data against us in time of war, and whether it's in Taiwan or the South China Sea or wherever, you know, the idea that Chinese have data that would allow them to shut down our infrastructure, our internet, our water, our electricity, and so on, if push came to shove, every nation should want to get rid of TikTok. The question of WeChat is more complicated because, you know, for people like me, having been educated in China, you know, most of my friends are in China, and the only way I can communicate with them is through WeChat, which naturally I keep on a separate device along with my Douyin. You know, how do you ban that? How do you prevent that application from causing problems? And, you know, just today in the Foreign Interference Commission, there's extensive discussion of how WeChat was mobilized to possibly lead to a different result in 9 ridings in the last election. So, you know, we're all speaking of a peace here. But the feasibility of getting rid of TikTok is greater than the feasibility of being able to close down WeChat, I would say. And, you know, I think we should do whatever we can to meet the challenge of Chinese malign intelligence and data gathering in Canada. I'm just not so sure about how we can stop it. I mean, I think of the number of services that provide pirated videos that are so active in Canada and around the world that don't seem to be able to be stopped by government, who, you know, clearly would regard the activity of showing pirated videos on streaming services as being against the laws of Canada. But it goes on extensively in Canada and throughout the world, and there doesn't seem to be any really effective means to constrain it, even though they do have, as Connor suggested, or maybe it was Chongqing suggested, fines of say $5,000 for illegal use of this data. But I'm really concerned about the mechanics of it and the feasibility of it, and I really wonder if China is winning in this regard, and that despite our excellent discussion today, we won't see the end of TikTok in Canada anytime soon.
Thanks, Charles. I'd like to turn to our other guests, and maybe we're nearing the end of the time, and we told you we'd keep you around 30 minutes. We're already there. Maybe if you just give us, your closing comment or something you want everyone to listen to. As we said, we're gonna release the audio file after. We're gonna edit it down for a podcast that we'll release in a few months. But what do you want people following this discussion? What do you want people to leave with? What do you think is the most important thing? Chongqing, let me pass it to you.
My closing remarks would be, as a user, we have a choice on what kind of social media companies that we use. You can choose today to close your TikTok account if you have one, or migrate to another platform, which also have very addictive short videos, which I'm honestly addicted to as well. And another thing is, make use of the current mechanisms that is available in your country, even though it might not make a significant difference right away. For example, if you're in Europe, you can always file a complaint or a data request to TikTok and your local data protection authorities, telling them that you are concerned about how your data is being transferred or treated in the hands of TikTok. You suspect that they cannot provide sufficient protection when they transfer your data according to the privacy policy. And then your local data protection authority will have to investigate into the matter. And this might sound unrealistic from a point of a single user, but imagine if you are a bureaucracy and you receive more and more the same kind of complaint, they will have more incentive and more motivation to actually try to deal with the matter. And it will also give the government some sort of pressure that they actually have to deal with the issue of TikTok if they haven't made up their mind that they want to do it. I think I'll close with that.
Thank you. Connor, I'd love to get your closing comments or thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that if we're going to pass privacy legislation, social media companies, let's do it. And line number one of that legislation should be that authoritarian governments are not permitted to have any role in controlling those social media platforms, period. I am more optimistic than Charles is. I see his concerns. But I think with social media, it's a space where the user base can shift quite rapidly to another service. And it's not like pirating, where there's an economic incentive to use pirating in the same way. There isn't, for users, there isn't really an economic incentive in switching from Instagram to TikTok and so on. And I suspect TikTok will be replaced by something else quite quickly. The problem is, it's a double-sided coin. It can also be replaced by something from China quite quickly. So if I were in charge of writing legislation, like I said, line number one, China and other authoritarian governments are controlling social media. They are more than welcome to have accounts on social media and post on it. Let's let them do that. But they aren't in charge of the infrastructure.
Thank you, Connor. Charles, I'll give the last word to you.
Well, I think the lesson of this is that protecting Canada's national security is more important than the profits that people who are on the platform of TikTok are able to generate, and more important than the preferences of users to adopt this Chinese platform for their entertainment. We really have to be paying much more attention to Canada's digital security, as the next war is going to be about artificial intelligence and digital matters, probably more than blowing stuff up and airplanes and ships.
So listen, on behalf of my colleagues at the Montreal Institute for Genocide and Human Rights Studies, I really want to thank Charles Burton of Synopsis, Chongqing Kuang of the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance in China, and Connor Healy of IPVM for joining us. This is a great discussion. We learned a lot. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.